As you may have heard already today, New Zealand has officially gone into recession after the economy contracted a record 12.2% in the 3 months to June. This comes after data released by Stats NZ showed the impact of COVID-19 on jobs during that quarter was disproportionately felt by women. Well, that's putting it lightly. 10,000 out of the 11,000 jobs lost were lost by women. Makes it sound like it's their fault, doesn't it? 10,000 of the 11,000 people who lost their jobs were women. An Australian senior economist, Matt Grudnoff, has been looking into what he calls the pink-collar recession and has some suggestions for ways to stimulate the economy that benefit everyone. He's with me now from the Australia Institute in Canberra. Hey, Matt.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, great. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show. And what do we mean by that term, the pink-collar recession?
Well, pink-collar recession just simply means that the recession is being disproportionately impacting on women rather than on men. It's not to say that men aren't feeling the recession. Obviously, they are. It's just that women seem to be bearing the brunt of this in both New Zealand but also in Australia.
Yeah, that's not just a New Zealand thing. As I said, there are some pretty shocking statistics that of the 11,000 people who had lost their jobs, 10,000 were women here in New Zealand. But you're seeing similar sorts of things in your part of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Women are losing their jobs faster than men, but also they're losing their shifts faster than men. So when we look at hours worked, the total number of hours worked by males and females, we see in Australia that women are losing hours faster. So not just are they losing their jobs, but also those women who are still employed are basically losing shifts, are working less per week at a faster rate than men are.
And governments here in New Zealand and in Australia and around the world are trying to stimulate the economy and counter the economic effects of COVID-19. What are the ways they typically tend to do that?
Well, they can do it in a huge variety of ways. Really, stimulus is only limited by a government's imagination. They can hand out tax cuts. So this is indirect stimulus, so increase the after-tax income of people. They can invest in particular projects and employ people directly, or they can hand out money to particular industries to encourage them to do things. All of this, if that money then creates extra spending, extra demand in the economy, then creates unemployment. Stimulus is really a way of the government buying a lower unemployment rate when the recession is happening.
Sounds pretty good. So why have you found that the stimulus tends to disproportionately benefit men?
Well, it's because I think that our thinking is still locked back. If you cast your mind back 90 years to the Great Depression, that was really the first time that that governments really got involved in trying to prevent a recession, or in this case, a depression. And back then what they did was, particularly in countries like New Zealand, Australia, the US, is they started building or constructing projects. So they built dams, they built roads, they built bridges, they built all these kind of large infrastructure projects. Now, back 90 years, these projects required a huge amount of labour. They were very labour-intensive things to build all these big structures. Obviously, they employed men because 90 years ago, the vast majority of the labour force were men. But if we fast forward 90 years, the world has changed dramatically, and construction isn't as labour-intensive as it used to be. Now we use machines, we use all sorts of capital equipment, is how economists call it, rather than using labour. And these sort of construction projects aren't nearly as labour-intensive as they used to be. So if we look at, say, for every $1 million of stimulus that you put in, if you put it into construction, you get about 1.2 jobs.
Wow.
But if you put it into things like healthcare, education, aged care, you get about 10 jobs. And the jobs in construction are mostly men, but the jobs in these healthcare and education and industries like that are mostly women. So if we put our stimulus into industries that are labour-intensive, we not only get far more jobs for women, but we actually end up with more jobs for men simply because so many more jobs are created.
Would you be surprised to hear that the catchphrase in New Zealand for infrastructure projects was shovel-ready? The government was looking for shovel-ready projects that it could pour some cash into.
That's right. And we have the same thinking in Australia, and it really is 1930s thinking. The idea is that, you know, the way you stimulate is you give people hard hats and high-vis jackets, and then suddenly, magically, jobs appear because we're funneling into these projects. But really, that's not the case. That's not our modern economy. We have a service economy. We have an where the real jobs are, or lots of the jobs are, is basically in these areas of care. And if the government were to focus on things like aged care during a pandemic, that might be a good place to put money into. Healthcare, another good place to put money into. You'll create, you know, almost 10 times as many jobs putting money into those areas than you would into big infrastructure construction jobs.
Could it be argued that the infrastructure jobs at least have more economic value than a job created in, say, health or aged care?
Well, I suppose that's an interesting question. I suppose it depends on, you know, I mean, if you put it into healthcare and you put it into aged care and that saves lives, what is the value of a life? And, you know, as a member of the dismal science of economics, then perhaps I can try and value a life. But that's a really tricky question to answer. If we from healthcare, we just look at education. There, if you put more money into education, then somebody who is well educated will be far more productive across their life. And that has real value in the long run. We sometimes just think about long-term value is something that, you know, is made of concrete because it's hard and it lasts. But, you know, there are things like improving human capital, economists call it, people's education, that can have huge benefits for a society and an economy.
So what would a perfect stimulus look like if we accept that governments are going to spend billions of dollars? How should they spend it most wisely?
That's a great question, and it really is actually in part a democratic question. What a country needs to do is sit down and think, what do we want more of? If the question of we can't afford it vanishes, and it tends to vanish when you want to stimulate the economy, what you really need to ask yourself is, what do you want more of? What are those things that for ages people have been saying, well, we can't afford that because we don't have the money? Well, we can't afford it is off the table, so let's look at those kind of things. And the second thing you need to look at is what's going to employ a lot of people. So if you've got a number of projects, a heap of projects in front of you that are all good and you all think, yep, that's what I want more of, well, pick the ones that are going to employ the most people for every dollar that you put into them. And, you know, I mean, Stats New Zealand and the ABS, which is our statistical agency in Australia, can absolutely show you which industries employ more and which industries employ less.
I suppose it's easier to pick a project in an area like construction than it is in, for example, education or healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. People like something tangible. They like, you know, particularly politicians, they like to get dressed up in their hard hat and high vis and cut a ribbon or you know, unveil a plaque and show, well, this is what I've done. If you improve, you know, education or you improve healthcare and you save lives and you make people's lives better, that's actually better for the economy as a whole, but it doesn't look as fantastic as a brand new bridge or a lovely new highway. Absolutely. Sometimes the best solution isn't necessarily the best one from a political point of view. But if your focus is on the economy and your focus is on getting out of the recession as quickly as possible and employing as many people as possible, then you shouldn't worry about what you can ribbon cut. You should worry about what's going to employ people.
From a pure sort of economic employment perspective, is money the government spends on subsidised or free childcare, does it pay itself back? Does it have an economic value?
It absolutely has an economic value. We did some research at the Australia Institute that I work for that looked at and compared Australia and Nordic countries and looked at their participation rate and their different childcare. How much it costs the private sector, that is individuals, how much childcare costs. And we found that there were huge increases in participation in Nordic countries that were linked through to better childcare provision. There were also a number of other policies around maternity and paternity leave, but childcare was critical to that. And if you provide free or very cheap, high-quality childcare, you can actually massively increase the size of your economy because you have a whole section of the workforce, women, who enter it. And women are more likely to have a degree, And they're able to reach their full potential, go out and work and produce things for the economy and for New Zealand and Australia.
In fact, when you crunched the numbers, you noticed not just that free childcare helped women of, forgive the phrase, childbearing age, but in fact helped older women too.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we found was is that participation rates in women and men actually increased through their 20s at about the same rate. They were very similar. But what happened is that in their early 30s, the participation rate, which is the age when most families are having children, the participation rate basically fell into a hole for women. It went down and men's continued to rise. And after sort of when women got into their 40s and 50s, that participation rate did recover a bit, but it never got back to the original level. And we found that in Nordic countries, they didn't have that dip, and that participation rates in women continued to rise right up into the 50s and were very similar to men. So the lifelong earnings of women, if there is good, high-quality childcare at an affordable price that was available, was massively improved, not just for women who were having kids, but for women in the older age group where kids had finished or they didn't have kids at all.
And lest listeners think that this is a liberal or socialist plot, in fact, it's just better for the economy to have as many people working who want to as possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely right. This is just the hard economic numbers. You know, I'm an economist. I was just looking basically at how to grow an economy, how to improve the economy, how to improve its productivity, and how to make it larger. And a great way of doing that is providing childcare. I think what we've noticed in the lockdown, particularly when we've had kids at home, and parents have been working at home and also kids have been at home and learning from home, is just how distracting having children around can be to your productivity, to your output. And that's the case for school kids, which is normally not a problem because we send them off to school, but it's also the case for preschool kids. And if we provide high-quality care for preschool kids, then we unlock an entire section of the workforce that can continue to work.
Were you surprised, given Australia's need for a sort of an economic jolt, that the government earlier in the year announced that from mid-July childcare would no longer be free and that childcare workers would be stripped of access to JobKeeper, which is your equivalent of a sort of a subsidy over there?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very surprising decision. And it was not just bad economic sense. That is, the government for a period made childcare free in Australia, but then it was one of the first things that they withdrew. But they also, we have a wage subsidy over here. They also withdrew the wage subsidy from childcare workers. No other industry was excluded except for childcare workers. So not only was it bad for the economy, we suddenly had all these women and men as well who had preschool kids at home who couldn't then work from home as effectively. But it was also extremely bad for women. Women are more likely to work in the childcare industry and so they were losing their jobs. And they're more likely to take on the bulk of those caring responsibilities. So they're more likely to be impacted by the fact that there wasn't childcare available at an affordable price. In a pink recession, this is just another example of government policy that's compounding the problem, not trying to solve the problem.
Yeah. It's funny you say the government is stuck in 1930s thinking. I mean, there are very smart people who work for government. There are economists like you. Do you have a theory as to why they've sort of missed the point when it comes to stimulus?
Well, I know that, military historians often say that generals fight the last war. And I think it's just a natural cognitive thing that we look back when we have a problem, and we look back and we think, well, how did previous people solve that problem? And ingrained in them, I think, is this idea that stimulus is about building stuff, and that employs lots and lots of people. In Australia, in New South Wales, the Harbour Bridge was basically built during the 1930s depression, and they called it the iron lung because it kept so many people employed. And, you know, there are pictures of, you know, masses of people all across the bridge constructing it. Well, nowadays, that just simply doesn't happen. We have, you know, huge machines that basically do a whole load of the work. And I think just we just need to change how we're thinking and remember that the economy has changed in the last 90 years, surprise, surprise, and that it looks very, very different from the 1930s.
Stephen wonders if he's texted in, if one of the appeals of construction projects are they quicker to get up and running as opposed to social services?
Yeah, but I mean, construction projects actually often have a lead time. You talked earlier about shovel-ready projects. They're searching around for things that don't have that big lead time, and sometimes that's the hard thing. Whereas social services can be set up quite quickly. You know, if you wanted to bring more people into nursing homes in order to protect older people, or if you wanted to put in place programs that help children with their education, you can probably recruit and bring those in a lot faster than you can do if you wanted to build a brand new road or a brand new bridge that you hadn't sort of done any of the pre-work for yet. You'd probably be able to get social services up and running a lot faster than you can get construction projects up and running.
Matt Grudnoff, Senior Economist with the Australia Institute. Really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And by the way, I came across Matt through a podcast called The Pink Collar Recession. Well, it's an episode called The Pink Collar Recession, and it's put out by the Australia Initiative. It's a podcast called Follow the Money. So if you want more on that sort of topic, that's where you'll find it.